This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 7:06 a.m. Thanks for joining us on the show. I'm Julian Ng and joined by Lin Mao and Sharat Abdullah. And looking at the international markets, U.S. stocks closed higher yesterday in a choppy market. Investors are still looking at U.S. economic data as well as they were quite happy about the slight progress in the U.S.-China trade talks. All the three major indices in the U.S., the Dow Jones, S&P 500, as well as the NASDAQ, closed about one-third of a percentage higher.
Yes, European stocks as well were more mixed as the ECB mulled tiered rates, while the Deutsche Bank dropped on a talk of equity sale. So the stocks in France's CAC both were down 0.1%, but the UK's FTSE was the biggest gainer. They rose 0.6%, and Germany's DAX just slid into the green, up 0.2%.
Now moving on to Asia, Asian shares were mostly lower following a slip on Wall Street as investors watched the continuing trade talks between the U.S. in China. Overall, Japan Nikkei slid down the highest with 1.6%. Hong Kong was the only gainer at 0.2%.
Okay, and Reuters reported signs of progress in the trade talks between U.S. and China. Beijing officials are making unprecedented proposals to resolve a long-running tariff dispute.
So the Trump administration has said it is prepared to keep negotiating with China for weeks or even months to reach a trade deal that will ensure that the world's second largest economy improves market access and as well as intellectual property policies for U.S. companies. Aside from that, in the U.S., we also have a statement from New York Fed President John Williams, who downplayed fears of recession risks being signaled by bond markets.
He's probably taking his cue from Bangnagara governor, who said sure. The same thing.
That's right. So now, also Lyft, the other ride-hailing company besides Uber in the US, they raised $2.22 billion in its initial public offering, pricing its share at the top of the elevated range in a listing seen as a bellwether for Silicon Valley companies. The number two US ride-hailing company is priced at 30.8 million shares yesterday at $72 each after increasing the market range on Wednesday to between $70 to $72. And this is, I think, as expected, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's a benchmark valuation for Uber as well, which many people are sort of singing the doom of Uber because they are the biggest loss-making company in the world, but valued very expensively at between $75 billion in the past. And right now, valuations that are being bandied about for Uber, $120 billion, but Lyft is only operating in two countries and valued at about $25 billion, whereas Uber is a global company.
They operate in a much larger countries, though, about 60 countries in total.
That's right. And Lyft is only in the US and Canada. Mm-hmm. We have Tim Mahalan on the line. He's president of TJM Limited in Chicago, and he's going to help us take a deeper dive into some of the market factors. Good morning, Tim. The US PMI data is scheduled to be out on Monday next week, and the PMI figures in the Eurozone, China and Japan were not so good. What are your expectations for the U.S.?
Well, I think the U.S. is going to be relatively much better than Japan and China and what we saw in Germany, for sure, because the U.S. economy is obviously stronger, although not maybe unaffected by what's going on in the rest of the world. But nevertheless, the economy is in much better shape, so it really isn't much of a surprise. We all know that China's been weak. I think Europe is a basket case of in bad need of structural reform. So therefore, I think the market will be expecting less. My view is that we might be a little bit surprised with the resilience of the economy here.
Now, Tim, the global bond market rally accelerated on Wednesday, moving away from the inverted yield curve, which spooked investors earlier this week. What do you make of this?
Well, say I think that what I think spooks investors is, number one, the Fed is certainly moved from an asymmetrical directive biased towards tightening to not only neutral but symmetrical, to one where they'll be just as willing to ease as tighten. But the key factor to me, what's going on in the long end of the market, is there's $10 trillion worth of negative sovereign debt in the world, if you can believe that or not, at this stage. And we're still talking about economic weakness. So I think the flattening was one that's begging, number one, for the Fed to back off, number two, for them to loosen. But I think what you're going to see coming up here is the Fed is going to announce how they're going to restructure their balance sheet and shorten their maturities. So So my view is twos, tens, stop at 10 basis points. It's moved back out to 16 or 17. I think it's going to steepen back out towards 30. And I think that the threes, tens is going to be flattish or whatnot until the Fed does ease, which incidentally the Fed funds futures market is predicting is likely to happen by the end of the year.
Tim, let's move on to the UK. Brexit is not coming any closer to any resolution, with the only indication of a possible resolution is a split majority for a soft Brexit option. How would financial markets, particularly in the fixed income side, take to a soft Brexit? And can we expect to see a continuing slide in the yield?
You know, I think that, again, I think this is a matter of yield compression, given the fact that long ends of the market around the world are forcing rates lower on the long end than the relative low yields. The soft Brexit, and again, this is one of these things I'm really kind of up in the air, not quite sure anyone really knows what's going to happen. However, my view is it probably won't be a soft Brexit. It'll probably be a hard Brexit, because I don't think May's going to get her votes. And therefore, I don't think that the UK is going to fund the next EU elections and pay, re-up their dues. So I'm not so sure a hard Brexit is really all that bad of a deal either. And quite frankly, with what's going on in the banking system and talk about structural reforms in Europe, I could probably see a case why they would want to leave the EU and do it on their own. So again, this is a real big uncertainty. I think everybody fears the worst, but I'm not so sure a hard Brexit wouldn't be the best thing for everybody to finally put this thing to an end and then at least get people to resolve the real important issues by the fact that there is no more uncertainty.
Thanks so much for joining us. And that was Tim Mahalan, president of TJM Limited in Chicago. I think Tim is probably one of the very few observers, commentators, who don't mind a hard Brexit.
Surprisingly.
Something fresh there.
Yeah, because I think there were figures that UK stand to lose about 48% of their export revenue to the EU. Unlike the EU, they'll probably just lose about 15% of their export into the UK.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and talking about bond yields around the world, the slowing economic growth may be spurring the rally in sovereign debt in China. Two junk-rated Chinese property dollar bonds priced on Wednesday after receiving orders of more than $2 billion each for offerings of only $500 million. So very much oversubscribed for junk-rated bonds in China.
It's quite interesting. And so also investors globally are piling into fixed income assets as central banks take a dovish stance amid the slowing economic growth. I mean, the 10-year Treasury yield has slid to the lowest since December 2017, and rates on benchmark German bonds also sank further below zero. In comparison, high-yield Chinese builder bonds are still offering relatively attractive yields of around 7.6%.
Yeah, but that's very high risk. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So it really depends on which side of the divide you are as an investor. If you believe that the world is slowing down, then these bonds would represent a risk to you that they might not be able to pay off their bonds, and therefore they have to have a higher interest rate to attract you.
Yeah, on top of that, there's also the relaxation of property curb on the mainland. It also boosted investors' confidence in this heavily indebted sector. Alliance Bernstein, the BNP Paribas Asset Management, and also Jupiter Asset Management expecting further bond gains. Now, the China property dollar bond, they have already handed investors a return of 9% so far. So overall, demand for dollar-denominated bonds in Asia is looking also robust.
Also, of course, China is opening up, and this has been indicated as part of the trade talks. China's bond markets overall right now is about $13 trillion, and the influx of about $100 billion a year from foreign investors would open up the market to more scrutiny from international investors, and that is a very interesting development to watch out for. All right, we'll be coming back with more reports on the Bank Negara annual report, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.